Everyone sit up. Well, thanks for coming along this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can I just say to, I know there's been a meeting around waterfront issues in Auckland. As a courtesy to our Australian guest, I'll deal with any domestic political issues later if you want to liaise with my office. Can I take the opportunity to welcome my colleague Stephen Smith to New Zealand? This is a follow-up. This is the second six-monthly talk. This year we meet in February in Perth for formal discussions. We have a tradition of six-monthly discussions, and this time we've met for the afternoon in Wellington. I think it's the first time, Stephen, you've been to Wellington for these six-monthly discussions. So it's a pleasure to host you in the parliamentary precincts. The New Zealand-Australia relationship, I can report, is in good heart. In fact, one of the things that becomes abundantly clear to any new Minister of Foreign Affairs in this country is just how close the relationship is, not just in terms of policy settings, but in terms of day-to-day contact. In addition to the six-monthly formal discussions that we've now had twice this year, Stephen and I seem to bump into each other at international meetings on a regular basis, always take the opportunity to have a good discussion about the issues of the day and talk frequently by telephone, often comparing notes and reflecting on our respective positions. And I just want to record my personal appreciation to Stephen Smith for the way in which he's made the job of a new Foreign Affairs Minister in this country easy, made the easing into the relationship with Australia such an enjoyable and constructive process, and thank him for the spirit with which he's approached the new relationship which we have. Today we've had the opportunity to run through the full agenda of regional issues and bilateral issues. We've had a talk about many of the issues on the international stage which affect our collective interests, and we'd be happy to deal with those without me perhaps giving you a shopping list to pick from. We have some significant business on the agenda up ahead. Australia has, of course, the hosting responsibilities for the Pacific Leaders Forum later this year in Cairns. Our Prime Minister, I think, has indicated that he will be in Australia for a visit over the coming month. I think he's indicated probably around August. And, of course, we have the Trans-Tasman Leadership Forum, which is a very important item on our agenda coming up in a little while. We have had the opportunity to discuss most issues that will be reflected in those various meetings and make sure that the work that our Prime Ministers would expect us to have done to prepare for those important occasions is well progressed at this stage. So with those general introductory remarks, can I again welcome Stephen Smith formally here to Wellington and invite him to say a few words.
Well, thank you very much, Murray. I'm very pleased to be here. It's not my first visit to New Zealand as Australia's Foreign Minister, but it's my first visit to Wellington. Last year I was here, of course, for the formal consultations which were held in Auckland. But as Murray has said, we do Australia-New Zealand ministerial consultations at foreign ministerial level every 6 months. I was very pleased to welcome Murray to Perth in February when we had our first formal bilateral as foreign ministers, and that was both enjoyable and productive, and the same has occurred today. The relationship between Australia and New Zealand from Australia's perspective is Australia's closest and most comprehensive relationship. We have both been the beneficiaries of the world's most successful free trade agreement, our closer economic relations, for over 25 years. We also pursue formally defence and security cooperation under our closer defence relations. We have extensive people-to-people exchanges, and we have extensive high-level ministerial visits. Our Prime Ministers have met on numerous occasions. Murray and I have met on numerous occasions. Australia's Treasurer and your Finance Minister, whom I'll see shortly this afternoon, meet regularly. And our Trade Ministers, as we speak, are together in Samoa, and they meet regularly. So this reflects a close and comprehensive partnership. We also work, importantly, very closely together in the region, whether it's the Pacific Island Forum or whether it's particular aspects of our Pacific Regional Cooperation, for example, the Ramsey Mission. We also work closely together in East Timor. We also work closely multilaterally and through the international institutions, whether that's, for example, the WTO or the United Nations itself. And as Murray has said, on a regular basis, separately from our formal meetings in Australia or New Zealand or in the margins of regional or multilateral meetings, we're regularly on the phone to each other. The strength of the relationship is such that from an Australian perspective or a New Zealand perspective, it doesn't matter whether the governments are Labor or Liberal in Australia or Labor or National in New Zealand, the relationship goes on at a very high level, and that's a very good thing. We've traversed, as Murray has said, the array of regional and international issues today. From Australia's perspective, we've spoken in particular about our very close relationship in the Pacific, how we work together on development assistance issues, how we work together on some of the region's problems, in particular Fiji, and how we're looking very much forward to hosting the Pacific Island Forum Leaders Meeting in Cairns in August, and how we're also looking very much forward to the Prime Minister's visit to Australia. In addition to the Prime Minister's visit, as Murray has said, every year we do the annual Australia-New Zealand Leadership Forum, which is a very successful combination of business and government forum, and that takes place in the near future as well. So Murray, I'm very pleased to be here. I've been to Wellington before, but I was very much younger. I was a young official from the Office of the Western Australian Attorney General and spent a day in Wellington, but I have to say on that day the weather was nowhere near as nice as it is today. So thank you for the hospitality you've shown to the Australian delegation. Our meeting has been both productive but also very enjoyable, and we look forward to the remainder of our visit here tonight and tomorrow. Thank you.
Any questions?
On the issue of Fiji, what did you discuss about the current situation and any further action that might be taken by the two countries?
We personally reaffirmed Australia's and New Zealand's support of the unanimous decisions of the Pacific Island Forum. Our disappointment at Fiji's retreat from democracy and the abrogation of the Constitution, and our support of the unanimous decision of the Pacific Island Forum Special Leaders Meeting in Port Moresby in January to effectively see the suspension of Fiji from the councils of the forum. We also spoke about our concern about Fiji's deteriorating economic situation. One of the adverse consequences of Fiji's retreat from democracy has been a decline in Fiji's economic and social circumstances, and we fear that that is being very substantially compounded by the global economic downturn. And we spoke about the need to try and find some form of dialogue to get Fiji back on the path to democracy. But I think it's true to say that given the conduct of the interim administration, that we are not necessarily imbued with a great sense of optimism that that will occur in the near future. We continue, from Australia's perspective, and also I think it is true to say from New Zealand's perspective, want to ensure that we do what we can to assist the people of Fiji themselves, while at the same time continuing to place pressure on the interim administration to start a path back to democracy.
Mr. McLean, you spoke at the Senate committee about the fact that there is maybe perhaps a way of putting more pressure on the UN and others to stop using Fijian military as peacekeepers. Was there any discussion about that, and
whether
you were taking
any
action?
Yes, there was. In fact, we've discussed this, I think, on most occasions. We've discussed the problems surrounding Fiji. I think I've made it pretty clear that the New Zealand government regards the ongoing use of Fijian peacekeepers by the United Nations as unhelpful. It's particularly unhelpful in the context of the previous Secretary-General having warned the Commodore that if he proceeded with his coup, then the withdrawal of the sending home of the Fijian peacekeepers would be a consequence of that. The fact that there's been no action on that front hasn't sent a very useful signal on behalf of the international community. And I think the interim regime in Fiji has gained comfort and considerable amounts of cash from those ongoing peacekeeping activities. We've tried to, if you like, step up the level of dialogue with the United Nations in that respect, and I intend to keep doing so. The Australian Prime Minister a couple of months ago, I think, indicated that we'd at least managed to establish a position where the position would not get any worse, if you like. There'd be no new deployments, but we would like to see if we can make some advance on that. I see that not just as a means of securing some progress in the short term, but also it involves an acceptance of the fact that there can be no good long-term prospect for Fiji so long as there is an oversized military being sustained by UN deployments.
But neither country, New Zealand or Australia, are willing to impose more restrictions or more bans or anything. To put more pressure on, it's not going to come from any other area.
I think we've both taken the view over some time that we need to take care not to further damage the prospects of people in Fiji who are already suffering as a result of the actions of their government over which they have no control. So we've looked to try and target our actions to send a direct message to those who are in a position to change the course that Fiji is on. We've I think from time to time looked at the sanctions that are in place and asked ourselves whether they could be recalibrated in some way to become more effective. I think that ultimately this is a problem over which we're simply going to have to be reasonably patient. I think that's been the theme I've been rehearsing for some time, and it continues to be my view. I share the Australian perspective that the situation economically in Fiji has deteriorated quite significantly, and we're watching events in that respect very closely.
Is it quite frustrating to see, in 2 years off, Fiji going down this path, and the forum has left the door open in terms of dialogue, which keeps seeming to be rejected? I mean, what else can
we do? Well, it is deeply frustrating. Australia strongly supports the unanimous decision of the forum to suspend Fiji from the councils of the Pacific Island Forum, particularly at ministerial level. But at the same time, we do need to continue to find ways of having a dialogue with the administration to try and persuade them to move down a path towards democracy. At the same time, let me underline and reinforce the point that Minister McCulley has made, which is Australia's sanctions, for example, are targeted to members of the regime in terms of travel sanctions. We don't want to do anything which would adversely impact on the people of Fiji, which is why, for example, we don't have trade bans or trade sanctions. And in terms of United Nations peacekeeping missions containing members of the Fiji military, this is precisely the same issue which Prime Minister Rudd has taken up with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, which I've also taken up with Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon and other UN officials. And the UN has determined not to increase or expand its use of Fiji military for peacekeeping purposes. But both Australia and New Zealand continue to make the point to the United Nations Secretariat that the much preferred position would be for the United Nations not to have Fiji military as part of their peacekeeping arrangements until such time as Fiji returned to democracy. We do have to, as the Minister says, be patient. The Minister and I have both been members of the Pacific Island Forum Fiji Ministerial Contact Group. We've been to Fiji twice together. And often with the interim administration, it's one step forward and a mile back. And we went very many miles back with the abrogation of the Constitution. But we are very deeply concerned about the combination of Fiji's withdrawal from democracy and the adverse implications that that has clearly had for its economy, now compounded by the difficulties in the Pacific of the adverse consequences of the global downturn. And that general issue is one of the issues that we have agreed ought to be a focus of the Pacific Island Leaders Forum in Cairns in August. Not just how Fiji is suffering from the economic downturn, but more generally how our friends and partners in the Pacific are coping with the deleterious economic circumstances that the global financial crisis has currently left us with.
Do we understand
New Zealand and Australia might be offering some kind of help to Fiji to cope with the economic deterioration?
No, we're not so much offering help. We are urging them to return to democracy. We are seeking not to do anything which would impact adversely on the economic circumstances of their people. On the contrary, both Australia and New Zealand were very generous in the aftermath of the floods in Fiji a few months ago, which caused very serious dislocation to the Fiji community. So we continue, for example, to apply humanitarian assistance. But we are watching their economic difficulties with very close interest. And it may be in the not too distant future that Fiji itself has to call upon the international financial institutions for assistance.
Do we understand from what you're both saying that you've agreed at your talks today to make a fresh approach to the United Nations Secretary General on this issue?
Well, the approaches are ongoing. I think, as Murray said, every time New Zealand meets with UN officials, it makes the point. I can't remember in recent times a meeting I've had with a UN official where I haven't made the same point. So these representations are ongoing.
How does the UN justify
Well, I'm here to reflect the Australian position. It's a question you should put to the United Nations Secretariat, and I'd be very pleased if you did so.
Mr. McCurry, in regards to obviously the request that we've had from the US about special forces troops breaking out, do you seek the minister's advice about how to go about it, whether we send troops there or not?
We did what we normally do, which is to have a good discussion about what each of us is currently engaged in doing in that theatre. Australia has recently made some announcements with regard to their commitment to Afghanistan. Stephen Smith was good enough to ring me in advance of those decisions being made public and convey the contents to me. I'm expecting that in the next few weeks we'll have the conclusion of our formal review of our commitment to Afghanistan to hand, and I certainly will be on the phone to him to let Stephen Smith know where the New Zealand government gets to in relation to our own review. I think it would be fair to say that there's a sharing of information as an ongoing process rather than a seeking of advice in that sense.
What's the New South Wales trade issue brought up today, and what was the end of the discussion?
I think we spoke about it in the corridor, not the actual meeting.
Yeah. I think I've indicated to one or two who pressed the matter with me before this discussion, we've made some inquiries about the initiative that has been taken by the New South Wales government. New Zealand's position is that New Zealand firms are entitled to be treated as local in terms of the CER government procurement regulations. We're seeking clarification that that in fact will be the practice that is followed by the New South Wales administration. We've observed that there is some dialogue, some of it fairly robust, between Commonwealth ministers and the New South Wales administration, We're very pleased to see that's happening and very keen not to get in the way of it.
Mr. Smith, can this potentially throw a spanner in the works for Australia's national trade interests?
Well, I have made the point very clearly in Australia in the face of firstly publicity in advance of the New South Wales budget, but also in the aftermath of the budget earlier this week. And the same point's been made by my colleague Minister Crean. There are two very important points here. Firstly, no Australian state can do anything which is inconsistent with Australia's international obligations. That includes, for example, any obligation we might have to the WTO, but also includes, and this is the relevance of Minister McCulley's point, also includes any obligation we might have through any free trade agreement, of which the CER between Australia and New Zealand is such a compact or an arrangement. But secondly, and more importantly, both Minister Crean and I have made the point that this is not a time for any jurisdiction or country to retreat to protectionism. At a time of economic downturn, it is precisely the time to move to those policies which we know will enhance and expand economies and enhance and expand job opportunities and growth opportunities.
This initiative does seem to breach those agreements, though maybe not with New Zealand, but maybe with the EU and the US and other trading nations.
Well, I think Mr. McCulley has a very strong point about procurement policies and the CER. So I'm not proceeding on the basis that New Zealand has a difficulty or a problem with that. So Australian officers and officials are looking very carefully at the design of the program to see whether it does fall foul of any of our international obligations. But there's a more fundamental point, is that we don't believe that signals should be being sent at this time, which reflect a retreat to economic policies which, in our view, shunt growth rather than enhance growth.
But you've been unable to give an assurance that New Zealand would be covered by that local provision?
No, I haven't given the assurance. Mr. McCulley has been, and his officers, as I understand it, have been dealing directly with the New South Wales government to confirm that point. But it is very clearly the case that no procurement approach effected by a state or territory government of Western Australia, state or territory government of Australia, can be in breach of a free trade agreement obligation which Australia has seized, and the common and the CER arrangement between Australia and New Zealand is a free trade agreement.
So the federal government potentially have to step in. Could they override the New South Wales budget?
I'm entirely happy for the government of New Zealand to be advancing its own case in this matter, and I've got no doubt it's doing it very effectively.
Just to return to Fiji for a moment, perhaps the difficulty of the United Nations is actually finding, locating peacekeeping forces to replace those in Fiji if they were removed. Would Australia and or New Zealand offer troops to replace the Fijian forces?
Well, Australia has been one of the most substantial peacekeeping contributing nations for 60 years. We continue to make substantial peacekeeping arrangements, and we wouldn't be proposing to proceed on the basis of making a greater contribution for or in return for the United Nations doing something which, in our view, it should be doing anyway.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. Cheers.